If you want to show me an indication, if you'd like to ask a question, and we'll go from there. So I've immediately got two questions here and a third. So we'll go one, two, three.
Anne Jenkin, member of the House of Lords. Sue, I think this is particularly directed to our last speaker, and I'm so sorry I forgot hearing. Sue and I have been working on the possible lifting of the ban on animal byproducts in Brussels, which is going through discussion at the moment. And obviously that would negate the need for the soy that we were talking about. I've recently been to a DEFRA meeting and from the Food Standards Agency meeting. It appears that it's not a question of the science, it's much more a question of fear of consumer backlash. And I just wondered whether any of you had anything to say about that, and whether indeed anybody here, not that ever should pitch in, but it's just a fear, not science, and I'd be interested if you had any thoughts on that.
I'm going to go to a later group because I think mine's so different from this question. It probably will.
Hi there, Katie Davidson from the Youth Food Movement UK. My question would be for Mark as well. You mentioned about the high quality vegetables being produced by UK farmers going to the supermarkets. My question would be, what's the kind of price structure? Because there's a real issue with that. If they are producing good high quality veg, are they getting a fair price for it in return?
Okay, and what's the I saw a third question over here, but I'll take the lady at the back there. Okay.
I would like to know if any research has been. Oh, sorry, my name's Jenny Wilson, and I run a business called Simple Food Remedies. I would like to know if any research has been done on how to grow food more nutritionally, and based on that. I don't think there is, because I don't think the law protects nutritional viability in our food, and I would like to know why. So that's my angle, because the food needs to be nutritious, but we're always talking about more crops and economics, and I'm looking at it from the nutritional side, so that's.
Okay, thank you for those. I'll take those first three questions, and I think, Mark, you're singled out to answer to start with, so if I can ask you to begin.
You know, the question of the meat and bone meal going back into rations, the scenario we've got, you're quite right, the general public does not like meat rations, if it's the thought of it going into what they're eating at the end of the day. What we're trying to achieve is the animal's got to have a protein source from somewhere. So the question is, do you take a step backwards and go back to what we were doing, which I'd suggest a lot of the system that used to produce it's disappeared now anyway. The other thing is that if we put a little bit of money behind either producing lupins or soy or whatever in this country, then we could actually do it. And we're looking at a timescale of only probably 3 to 5 years maximum. So that's where we're at with that. Do we hang on for a few little bit longer and put some money into actually getting these things productive? Because it's always back to having some research farms, just doing some basic agronomic research on it. And the minute you get this sort of acreage of product, because we want a lot of tonnage of this product, as you can see in this country, then you will get the agrochemical companies will be interested in actually having a look at this product and developing the herbicides and so on to go alongside it. At the moment, it's such a small beer that nobody's interested. So it's a chicken and egg situation. The problem we have at the moment, there is not a method of getting that knowledge or that requirement from the farmer up to the people that can actually make these things happen, like yourselves. It's a very difficult one. So we are struggling away in a small way in Nottinghamshire, if you like, with something that has got a huge potential in it. We have farms or companies that we deal with in Devon and Ireland and all over, all keen to do these things, and it could just take off overnight if we would just let it. So I hope that helps you on that front.
Anybody else want to add to that particular question? Martin?
Just to follow up a little bit, I agree entirely with what Mark's saying, but I want to pick up on your point about fear. You were talking about fear. I think there is a real problem that we have when we talk about food, we talk about food production systems, is that the science, the evidence, is not necessarily there on the one hand. In many cases it is, but it's not communicated properly in a means by which it can be readily understood by a wide range of people. Communication of science is something which I don't think we've been very good at in the UK, and I think scientists are probably responsible as well for that inability. But getting the evidence, getting the science base, getting the evidence out, and getting it out in a meaningful way that everybody can understand is a critical issue. The other issue, coming back to this point about what goes back into the food chain, is that our research programs are maybe not be in existence anymore, as Mark was saying. Very often they're funded for short time periods, for too short a time periods, so you actually can't look at the long-term effects. So much of the research money that I get from the research councils in the UK is for 3 years. I have a project funded for 3 years. If I can be successful, I can get it funded for another 3 years, but I'm not always successful. We need the appropriate time horizons for the funding agencies to be able to do that work. Now, in some cases, those time horizons are okay with the research institutes in this country. There's some excellent research institutes in this country, but they've been pared to the bone. And so we need to be thinking about how we change policy in that respect.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm going to
pass these around.
Indeed, yeah, if you want to. I'm going to move on to the question about the sort of fair price issue. Does anybody want to pick up the mark? Do you want to? Can I ask the panelists to speak up as well? Because I think people at the back are straining a little to hear.
I was originally trained in commercial horticulture when such a course existed years ago. The problem we have in this country is that the supermarkets are dictating the return, as we know, on vegetables, milk, whatever. Vegetables in particular, it's a difficult one, because now supermarkets are having what they call a designated supply, if you like. It's the person that will supply that particular product to them. They will have one supplier. There'll be another company will be supplying another supermarket and so on. And the threat always is, if that supplier will not, for example, if leeks go on promotion suddenly out of the blue, and they want to chop the price by half this week, then that grower has to back that, or you don't get the business again next year. But also, there is a limited price point with all these things, and it just frightens me today reading the Telegraph. I look at all the adverts that everybody is now using vegetables as one of the lost leaders, if you like, that they're going to try and pull customers in with. Someone has got to pay for that, and at the end of the day, it's the farmer that's paying for it. It leaves nothing for reinvestment. The vegetable industry in the UK is teetering on the edge. The same grower that had those mesh on his swedes the other day is debating. He's invested £100,000 in those things. He needs 10 years to get the return on that. He's been doing it 5, and he's ready for packing up because he's not getting any more money for that product. Beautiful quality product.
So what you're saying is they're making the investment to make a better quality vegetables, etc., but they're not actually benefiting from that?
No, there's no long-term commitment from anybody. There should be a partnership between each supermarket, which they will tell you there is, but in truth, there is not.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can be dropped overnight.
Okay. Again, if anybody wants to add to that, or there's the question about the sort of nutrition side of things and the research into that, Julia.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to the nutrition question, Jenny. There is research on nutrition. There's not very much, though. And you're most likely to come across it in organic conferences or meetings or publications where people proactively... or meetings or publications where people are proactively interested in nutritional aspects of food and farming, because normally the whole issue of nutrition is just ignored. And if it was put at the forefront of our goal for farming, what is farming meant to be for us, to produce nutritious food for us, then it would turn the whole farming upside down and the approaches we take to it. So Newcastle University has a research group called the Nafferton Farming Group, and they've been doing some research on food quality issue. They've been looking at plant phytonutrients and how you can vary those levels using different agronomic techniques, such as not spraying with pesticides. And there's some interesting results coming out of that. research has been done on grass-fed livestock production, and that's shown differences in fat contents in milk. You know, it's quite basic stuff, but it is coming out. And we have the long-term study that was done quite a few years ago by Anne-Marie Meyer, who looked at the nutritional content of fruit and vegetables in the UK post-war up to, say, the early 1990s, and looked at the decline in mineral and content of that. So there are some studies floating around. And in the USA as well, from the Rodale Institute, something is being done. But it, you know, again, it's not a lot. The Soil Association have written a report trying to summarise all the evidence. That's a few years old now, but you know, there still is some work going on, but we do need a lot more.
Thank you for that.
I couldn't hear all the questions. I'm presuming it's about the quality of food and what's gone. From my point of view, the soils in this country are depleted. We have different areas of the country where you have deficiencies of different minerals and so on, which I have to correct in the soil. An interesting case was the selenium issue, where I listened to an interesting speaker 10 years ago at Wellesbourne at the National Vegetable Research Station speaking about the deficiency of selenium in this country and the effect that it's having on mental health. And in Finland, they've obliged their farmers there to add selenium into their fertilisers because they've realised there is a connection. Perhaps correct me on this in a minute. Yeah. But in that country, they've seen mental health improve a lot from it. When I asked the question about are we going to do anything in this country, the answer was the government does not want to get involved in a public health issue. But I just see, you can see mental health in this country. I know there's a lot of other stress in life, but the last 20 years, depression has become so widespread now, and you just wonder why. We used to get our selenium source from imported bread wheat from Canada. Then in the 1970s, we started to breed our own bread wheats. Great stuff. The problem is the UK soils are deficient in selenium. So now we've replaced a product that got it in it with something that hasn't got it in it. So you have to ask the question, should we be doing something about that? But I could talk for hours on it. It's a massive subject.
Thank you, Beth.
The nutritional environment, that's what the government needs to address first, is to put something in the law to nutrition. That's why there's so much junk on the market, because there's no law, there's nothing in the definition of the legal definition of food that says that it has to have any nutrition whatsoever. And the distillery legal document that's
I've given you a bit of leeway there, but I'm going to cut across you then to because I think it's something that I'm not representing the government, I'm representing the opposition, but I think it's a very good point, well made. Perhaps one of our future meetings we should have on the on a very important issue. I've seen four indications of people who want to speak. I've now seen about another 20, I'm going to take the four I saw. Well, I'm take three of the four I saw to start with. One of whom will have to be my co-chair, otherwise she will use physical violence against me later if I don't. But I'm going to take the gentleman there, and I'm going to take the lady on the front row there. Then I'm going to come to my co-chair, and then the gentleman there is the next one after that. So please be a bit more patient with me.
Thank you. My name's Deepak Raghani from Biofuel Watch. We've been campaigning against subsidies and incentives for biofuels for about 5 years, and we have now a piece of legislation in place called the ROCs legislation, the Renewable Obligation Certificate, which incentivises large-scale bioenergy in the form of biofuels and biomass. Now, a particular challenge happened a year ago at Bristol, where a power station had been rejected, a planning application had been rejected, and it was overruled by the Secretary of State. And a part of that overruling was that indirect impacts to do with biofuels, namely tropical deforestation, land grabs, human rights abuses, accelerated climate change, were not allowed to be taken into account as material evidence. And now we have a situation where over 40 applications for mid and some large bioenergy power stations have been applied for all around the UK, with a massive upfront venture capital investment on to do with actually acquiring the biomass, particularly for solid biomass power stations, in all sorts of environmentally delicate areas, the Congo Basin, the Amazonian Basin, and also land owners, community farmers in the south being persuaded to convert their land for bioenergy production using industrial agricultural methods. Now my question, or something I'd like, I wonder if you could comment on, is we have had a situation where after 5 years of campaigning and putting peer-reviewed research in front of government, and on top of that adding the government's own specialist reports from DEFRA and the Renewable Fuels Agency, concluding that these were real risks, we still have a situation where bioenergy is incentivized far more, to the tune of double, for example, for onshore wind, and yet there is no rocks or subsidies for something that would be truly valuable to the environment, which would be insulating all the Victorian housing stock, for example, in the country, something like that. And what my concern is we've got a situation that seems to parallel the economy a little bit. We've got 1,500 protests going on around the world against the deregulation of the financial system, the bailout of the banks, the obscene bonus culture that's not being rectified. And I'm wondering, what does it take for environmentalists who are giving up hope on the degradation of the planet because of environmental policy intervention? And I mean, do we have to have 1,500 campaigns like that running around the planet in order for us to take notice? So I just want to put that to you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Dan Mills from the Latin American Mining Monitoring Program. About soya, in my own country, Argentina, it has completely decimated the country. Now, you're talking about soya beans in this country. Where are you going to plant them? Are you going to take up arable land that is already being used for other crops? Are you going to deforest England's woods and Wales' woods and Scotland's? You know, this is absolutely stupid, if you will forgive me. I have one other question. Where do you get your funding from?
Yeah.
Do you get it from the agro-industry?
Yeah.
Agro-business?
Yes, thank you, Julia. I thought, thank you to all of you for your presentations, but I thought your strapline, if we could adopt it actually for our all-party parliamentary group. If farming was about nutritious food, it would turn farming upside down, and I guess that's part of what we want this all-party group to do. And the other just quick comment I'd make is we want to think a lot about the waste issue. It was raised by Anne Jenkin in terms of animal protein, but we feel, I think, that really we should be heading for a zero waste food system so that we're not planting things instead in order to feed them to livestock, just because the livestock at the moment have been bred so that they have to have such a high protein diet, and we should be making use of the fact we are the best country in the world at growing grass, for instance. My question actually also is about the funding though, and I find it as a parliamentarian incredibly frustrating that Parliament has no input into what the funding priorities are, and indeed the funding councils are said to be independent of politicians. Now that means that actually nobody's really accountable, because the politicians aren't accountable because it's independent. The councils are independent, and the councils aren't accountable because to whom? Now my question to you is that a correct perspective? If so, you've mentioned some of the great lacks in funding, and the fact the MOD get about 200 times the amount that all the other departments get put together, I think is absolutely immoral, but that's a different question. What can we actually do about this issue of accountability, and where do we go to find out what projects are getting funded and which projects have applied and are not getting funded? Because that's a critical question.
Okay, there's some to the point questions there. Can I really urge you to sort of throw your voice as much as you can, because I know that I can see by the faces of the pained looks on some of the audience at the back there that the voices in this room aren't carrying, and hopefully by the 6:30 session, if we can perhaps get the microphones working, that would be really helpful.
We're in a different room.
Different room, hopefully, where we've got microphones working. Right, oh, of course we are, we're in the Jubilee, yes. So, who would like to take biofuels, the soya in the UK, the funding, funding priorities, and turning farming upside down?
I can
Julia, fire away.
A few comments to each, to some of those, apart from biofuels, because I can't agree with you and I don't know what the solution is. About where does the funding come from, and you know, in my experience, we get our research funding from DFID sometimes, from DEFRA sometimes, from private funding organisations or philanthropists, various other places. But it's really difficult if we want to decide what we want to do research on. It's very difficult to be proactive about that and get funding. Usually we have to fit into what the donor wants in some way or other and shoehorn our ideas into what they want and disguise our ideas and use their words to cover up what we really want to do. So it's quite difficult, and especially with the move towards public-private partnerships, because if we're trying to do, say, horticultural research, where's the industry which is going to partner up with, say, an organic research program when the product might not be something that's it might not be a product that we want to research on, actually, and even if it is, it might not be a product that they're going to make a fortune on either. So, you know, it's difficult to access certain types of funding streams anyway. But maybe taxing, you know, we could look at this issue of the private sector having some of its research funding being open, more democratic in the way that is handled and the way that decisions are made around it. But I just wanted to mention about waste and zero waste. And you know, we waste between 30% and 40% of food, pre and post harvest anyway. So I don't think we have a problem kind of with this argument about feeding the world in the future. We are already wasting almost half of what we produce. But what I'd like to just mention it about is permaculture, which is about the only design system I know of, which does really look at waste from the very beginning. It links up every output and throughput in the system. And it's something that, say, the organic movement hasn't really got such a grip on at the moment. But if we start to implement more permaculture thinking in our designs of the food systems, we will be able to much more easily link up these so-called waste areas, which aren't really waste at all, and to sort of get to deal with them in a more efficient way. Yeah, that was all really, except that in my opinion, science can be very subjective, and I would rather use my own common sense than follow what the science has to say about what we might eat or grow all the time. Yeah.
Thank you, Jill. Mark?
Yeah, can I answer the one about the soya crops? We have in this country the situation where our arable farmers are now trapped in a rotation with their crops of simply growing wheat, then oilseed rape, then back to wheat again for a large part of the acreage in this country. That is not sustainable. We're going to run into serious disease problems. The need a third crop at least in that rotation. That's where soil would fit in. I probably didn't put it over very well, but my preference for the UK would be something like white lupin. It would suit the UK far better. The soya would only suit the southern half of this country, whereas the white lupin would fit the whole country. So, if you like, the soya is a second string, but it would fit in well for a percentage of the acreage in this country as a good break crop, and one that fixes nitrogen and would have a lot of beneficial effects in this country. But my preference, as I say, would be for a white lupin. And in terms of, was a question about where my funding comes from?
Well, where does funding come from?
At the moment, the funding is literally thousands of pounds, a few thousand pounds, out of a company that supplies the plastics or the films. And there's another seed merchant who will put a few thousand pounds in. We're working with a pot of probably £15,000 a year to develop these things, but a lot of people put in a lot of goodwill time in to try and get these things going. We are not on the scale of, you know, Syngenta or anybody like that, sure you.
Yeah.
Success. If only all technology was that simple. So I'm not sure whether we completely covered all the questions, but if there's anything...
I was trying to get the gist of your question earlier. So was yours about, is biofuel in this country sustainable, or is that the...
Well, why are we doing it, I think, was the...
Why are we doing it when all the peer-reviewed research shows that actually it's exacerbating key problems in the global south, and particularly agroecological farming methods and the associated land grabs?
I think that's already been deflected in this country, things I'm seeing.
Yeah.
You know, with a huge move to biofuels at the moment.
Martin, did you want to come back on that?
Yeah, just quickly on the biofuel thing, I agree with you entirely. The whole experiments on miscanthus and willow, for instance, in terms of productivity, even though you get very high yields per unit area on those, the supply chain economics doesn't work. But of course, we had to do that science to see whether or not it would work. The question about feeding into bioethanol, effectively, and producing biofeedstocks for bioethanol, which obviously fits very neatly into the supply chain for liquid fuel, is one that should be taken in a broader way, where innovation needs to really be pushed. And that is, for instance, looking at algal cultures and things like that, which could be grown in non-agricultural land, in high-tech systems. But the problem with many of the algae that are present that can grow very fast is that the actual cell structures are extremely difficult to break down and to actually convert into bioethanol, for instance. So there's a lot of work that's got to be done at a microbial level to be able to achieve that conversion. That's where innovation could come in, but it will not be quick for this particular country unless that science, which will be extremely innovative science, and dare I say it may involve some genetic modification, but we might well be able to achieve it.